Hey everyone, welcome to the Cloud Native Show. I'm Jeff Holland. I know you're used to seeing Shane. Now, I'm on the serverless team and Shane hasn't invited me yet to be on the Cloud Native Show, but serverless is a huge part of Cloud Native. So let's go find Shane and talk to him more about it.
Is that Jeff?
Shane, buddy.
What's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
What are you doing here?
What am I doing here? You have the Cloud Native Show, and I have the most Cloud Native goodness to share of anybody, and I just wanted to have the chance to talk to you about it.
All right, so tell me, where does serverless fit in the Cloud Native world?
You don't have to sound so skeptical, dude. No, I loved the show. I really had I wanted to talk to you about this, because
awesome.
To your point, Cloud Native, serverless, where do they mix? How should I think about it?
Right.
To me, when I think about Cloud Native is writing applications in a way where you're specifically thinking about the benefits that the cloud can provide. So it's not just writing applications that you might have written 10 years ago, but choosing to host it in the cloud. But it's how can I write this app in a way that takes advantage of the unique benefits that the cloud provides? And to me, serverless is like the perfect realization of that, because really the only reason you can write serverless apps is because the cloud exists. So you get some unique benefits, both in the costing model, the scaling model, which I'm sure we'll talk about, to really make it this idea of, hey, this is a cloud native app. This is an app that you couldn't have written before without the cloud there to help you out.
Now, when I look at serverless, I think, okay, I'm gonna take a piece of the app that I might've had in my monolith, right? And I have a subroutine or maybe a class, and I want to just take this one little piece of functionality, and now I have the benefit of maybe just doing a function. Is that the only benefit that I'm getting out of that? Because I know that I can get all the scaling behind it, but what are some of the other benefits that I'm going to have by taking that one little function that might be doing a product call or listening to my events? What are some of the other benefits that I'm going to get other than scaling by just putting my stuff in that, you know, new little function that runs in the cloud?
Yeah, it's a good way to think about it. And that's really what a lot of people are kind of approaching functions on. You kind of intimated already, like functions are event driven. Mm-hmm. So any part of your application where there's some event that's happening, when you start using serverless and specifically thing like Azure Functions, you really think about what are the events that are happening, whether like maybe I have an existing monolith and there's an event of somebody's placing an order. Hey, I could now turn this into a function. And to the point, like a lot of people, their first thinking around serverless is the costing and the scaling aspects.
Sure.
So the idea that you only pay when this thing is actually running. So if no one's placing orders, you're not paying for it. And then the inverse one, like, hey, what if we have a huge promotion and everything goes crazy?
Sure.
To some of the other benefits that I've been surprised by and kind of as I've grown in this space, just that way of thinking in general is actually kind of liberating. So breaking down an application and not thinking in the terms of I have these infinite while loops grabbing events, but functions really force you to think in this event-driven world. So even besides the costing model and besides the scaling model, just thinking about your problem in a way of like, what are the events that I care about? And this is the action I want to have on those events. And it's nice because it kind of forces you into this very decoupled world where you change one event logic, you don't have to touch anything else but that little piece of event code. So it takes some learning. It's a new paradigm, but it can get you in a spot that you are decoupled, more agile, and kind of in a natural microservice environment.
Mm-hmm. Now, we do talk about kind of event-driven programming models, and obviously, I think the easiest one to kind of demo and talk about is that HTTP event, right? Mm-hmm. I go and ask an endpoint for something, you know, that GET API type of a call. I think it's the easiest one to talk about in demo. But there's other ones that, as I kind of jump into our Azure Functions stuff, I've dropped something in blob storage. We've got our Azure Cosmos DB events, you know, and we're starting to add a lot of functionality around this kind of event-driven programming model. What worries me a little bit one of the gotchas that I kind of get trapped in is, now am I trying to just like catch a bunch of ping pong balls that are flying in the air with my apps? Now, does this pose another challenge where now I have, you know, 80 things that are serverless and I think, this is awesome, I can scale infinitely. But now I have a bunch of events and I'm worried about, like, okay, what happens if something goes bad? Do I have to have serverless logics, you know, a logging now too? I mean, how do I handle some of the gotchas there and what are those gotchas?
Yeah, you're spot on. Like the first function you write, you're like, that was so easy. And
right.
you get one and then you get 10, you're like, okay. But we have customers who have like over 400 functions for a specific solution.
Right.
And to your point, it's the analogy of a ping pong ball, like juggling those or figuring it out. Like it's like, what do I do here? Like how do I even... What do I look at to know is my solution healthy right now or not?
Sure.
And it is an area that, I'm not gonna lie, like is an industry, we're gonna have to figure out some new ways of thinking around it.
Mm-hmm.
There's tooling today that we've been working on in Azure, things like Application Insights that can help give some unified logging or unified logic experience. So there's not a perfect answer for everyone. I've seen people use frameworks to kind of coordinate things. Like we have durable functions
sure.
to let you maybe chain together, but kind of think about it in a cohesive picture where it's like, hey, yeah, function one needs to call function two, needs to call function three. Maybe instead of just mentally or on some scratch piece of paper being like, this is the flow,
mm-hmm.
durable lets you write that way in code. Logic Apps, something similar as well, which we'll probably chat about some later.
Yeah.
But in actuality, it is something that it's a good point to bring up because my recommendation to customers interested in serverless is keep that in mind from day one.
Sure.
Like start building your apps in a way where you're thinking about the telemetry and the dashboards and the Azure Monitor alerts that mm-hmm. you might need to set up because you don't want to find yourself in like, what have I created here? Like, what am I
right.
going to do now?
Yeah, you've got this multi-headed monster now. And you're like, I have a whole new problem. Before I just had a monolith and I deployed that big DLL out to the web server. I'm like, awesome. And now I'm just going to move that big weight every single time. And now I've got a bunch of little weights I have to worry about. So you're right. We have to kind of be cognizant of what we're creating and how we're creating it. Kind of going back to the scaling aspect and thinking that I think that's probably the one thing is easy. I don't have to think about that, right?
Mm.
With the serverless model, I don't have to think about, wow, how many VMs do I need? How do I have to set them up to scale? Who do I have to call when things go wrong? So the serverless aspect is I don't have to think about any of those things. Right? If on a holiday weekend and I'm spiking, it's all handled for me. And I think that's great. What are the other benefits that we're solving with serverless other than the things I just talked about when it comes to kind of designing and worrying about those types of things?
Sure, yeah, I'd love to answer that. I can actually show you. Is it worth, have you seen some of our scale stuff too?
No, let's
just
check
to
that
kind
out.
Of illustrate.
Take my machine and
I'm
do
gonna
it.
Grab it. I'm gonna open up here because I'll get to your question, but the one thing I wanted to show is actually you can watch this happen live. So you can see that scale that you just talked about and observe it in real time using some of the modding tools that I just talked about. So what we're looking at right now is actually an offline app.
Okay.
I haven't called this function in like a few hours, so it's not actually running on any servers.
Mm.
And I want to actually illustrate that scale happening in real time.
All right, cool.
So let's just do one single request to the server just to wake it up. So I'm going to make a request. I haven't made one for a while. And in fact, when I switch back here to this live metrics view powered by Azure App Insights, you'll actually see that it spun up.
Okay.
I can see it was healthy. And behind the scenes, I actually even see a little known secret of serverless. There's my server that's
okay.
actually running my code.
Because the server is just somebody else's computer.
That's right.
Right.
Okay. That's exactly right. And so in fact, this one, it looks like it's server CC9E27. This is one of the best in the fleet we have
okay.
who showed up for
right.
the Cloud Native show today. But what I want to show, so a few things to notice. We have the server count up here. So there's only one server online because I only sent one request. And
yep.
you can even see the ID of it down here.
Sure.
So let's now throw some load at this thing. I'm going to throw 800 requests a second at this same function app. And what I love to watch in this is that first off, once this load test spins up, you'll see the request rates start picking up. And even before I finish that sentence, you'll see that already Azure Functions has seen, oh, the load is increasing. I now have
right.
4, 5, 6 servers online. I love watching how quickly this scales and adapts to growing load.
Yeah.
Because I don't know like how often you've either built a server or even tried to deploy one. Like it doesn't happen as lightning fast as
certainly
now we're at 10 servers.
Yeah, certainly not. I've worked in businesses where if I needed another server, they're like, hang on, we got to call XYZ vendor. And we'll let you know tomorrow.
Cross your fingers. And here now, in the time we've had this chat, I already have 13. So scale's a huge benefit of serverless, in the fact that I did nothing to my app to prepare it for the load I just threw at it. I just wrote that event, published it, and it took care of it.
Right, okay.
So scale is a huge aspect, one of the benefits. Another benefit, kind of thinking about reasons that I think people should think about functions or serverless in general, it's a super productive development environment. So when I think about I need to solve a problem, maybe something silly, like a few years ago, I got a video doorbell, and all it would do is when someone rang my doorbell, it would take a picture of whoever was at the door and send me a notification on my phone. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, I would love to have a way to actually have some like face recognition. So I could get a text that's like, your wife's at the door, or whatever, your friend's at the door.
Right.
So it was a cool little problem. And by using serverless to solve it, it really turned into maybe 100 lines of JavaScript code that just said, when the event happens of someone ringing my doorbell, run through some of these cognitive service APIs, do some facial recognition. I'm that creepy neighbor, I guess. I realize how this all sounds. But the point was, like, I didn't even need the scale aspect for that problem.
Sure.
Like, I don't have a lot of people ringing my doorbell every day. But by using serverless, I was able to just write 100 lines of code, publish it to the cloud, and forget about it. Mm-hmm. Pay a few cents a month, and now have this brand new capability where now my doorbell has face detection through using something like serverless.
Yeah, that's great. When I think about cloud native, and kind of I think when a majority of developers think about cloud native, I don't know if they're thinking about serverless first. Mm. I think that they're thinking more around, how do I get my app into a container and how I deploy that? Where do you see things like the serverless getting into that? How do we make developers think containers and moving your monolith apps or even your greenfield apps into containers? How do we get them to be educated around thinking serverless as a part of that conversation? Because serverless is fairly new, I think, when it comes to thinking about building applications. How do we get them to think, maybe I should use a logic app or a serverless function as a part of this solution first? Is it docs? Is it education? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, if there is a silver bullet, I don't know what it is.
Right,
I think it's probably a combination of whatever, doing shows like this, docs, conferences, blogging, you name it, like everything.
Right.
Everything you said was spot on. Like, serverless is still very new, and even when I think about cloud native, like most people think about APIs, microservices, Kubernetes.
Sure.
And serverless is something that's like, oh, maybe the serverless thing. The way I always try to talk about serverless is in the benefits that it can provide. And so often we talk about this spectrum where whenever you're doing a cloud native app, you have the spectrum of control on one side and productivity on the other.
Mm-hmm.
So if I think about just containerizing an app, maybe even just running it in straight VMs, I don't even use something like Kubernetes.
Mm-hmm.
I have a whole lot of control on the type of compute that it's using, the operating system, security updates, so I can configure that thing wherever I want. But to get that control, I've had to give up on a bit of productivity.
Sure.
Like, now I have to manage all this stuff. So in that spectrum, you've got like Kubernetes, which still gives you a lot of control. And then you start to move up, and finally you end up with like logic apps, functions, which are the high end of productivity with a little bit less control. And there's never gonna be a perfect answer for everyone, but for a lot of problems, the way I always try to communicate with people in the cloud native space is how much control do you actually need here?
Right.
And for those scenarios where you don't actually need to control like the underlying hardware, you don't even necessarily care about the size of the node, you just want your code to run.
Right.
Hopefully you start to think more, I'm just gonna choose the option that just makes me only think about that thing, and I don't have to worry about this other stuff, and it means my team now gets to spend their holidays with their family instead of sweating, worrying about, like, is my cluster have enough capacity to handle, you know, the holiday load.
It's funny you bring up Kubernetes a couple times, because I think that's the other thing that many developers think about when they say, I had to write a microservice app and a cloud native, and I worked at scale, and, you know, Kubernetes is one of those solutions that's there. And what's interesting about serverless is we ship our, you know, Azure Functions solution as a container too. So now I can take my serverless, put it in a container, and run it on Kubernetes. And that's really like, you're moving the shells a little bit on me here. So serverless and containers on, you know, Kubernetes or AKS, you know, why would I choose that over kind of entrusting, you know, Azure Cloud as a way to just not think about those things? So why would I want to do that?
Mm. And when I think about the answer to that, kind of going back to the spectrum of productivity and control,
right?
There are definitely scenarios where for one reason or another, you're like, you know what? I actually really like Kubernetes for this problem set. Maybe you're using like a whole service mesh. You've got a bunch of this cool stuff in Kubernetes. You have your policies, your VNet, everything's configured in Kubernetes. But maybe you also see those other things I talked about where it's like Functions gives you this really productive development environment. You can do these event-driven apps. You just think about, here's the code I want to run on an event. Mm-hmm. So Microsoft, one of the areas we've tried to differentiate in serverless is provide flexibility. To be able to say, okay, go use our dev tools, go write that app in a few hundred lines of code, but we will generate a Docker container so that you can run that in a container. We've even built tools to run inside Kubernetes. Like there's an open source tool called Kata that will scale your function containers the same way that you just watched them scale in the cloud. And usually the reason people do that, I kind of mentioned, maybe they already have a bunch of Kubernetes investments. Maybe they have a hybrid environment. They're like, look, I can't run Azure Functions on premises next to this IoT solution in the cloud. I need them running here in Kubernetes. Or we've recently, with like Python support for functions, a lot of interest around machine learning scenarios. Sometimes you want like GPUs, or you do care about controlling the hardware more. So we want to give you flexibility to say, okay, I'm still going to write my Python function, but now I'm actually going to run it here in Kubernetes with a GPU-enabled virtual node, whatever all the stuff you want to do. Mm-hmm. And we want to make that a seamless journey as you kind of switch between that productivity and control without having to sacrifice the good stuff that functions can offer.
Where do you see the serverless movement going? I mean, when I think about serverless, it is that we kind of make the joke like it's just somebody else's computer, right? But when I think about serverless, it's more than just the functions. We talk about logic apps, so it's really just workflow, right? We can do a lot with that. But I think about even like our solution, our Azure Container Instances, I think is really serverless, right? It's my ability to run a container on some machine. I have no idea where that machine is. Like it might be their CC92E or whatever it was that's running. Where do you see, you know, the serverless going? Are we gonna get to running serverless on, you know, something smaller than what we already have, or running it in different places? I talked with Brendan Burns a while back, and he kind of mentioned to me like, well, we might be running Kubernetes in cars, you know, and which seems a little silly, but are we going to be running these same types of solutions in an IoT world? Are we pushing, we're already pushing containers out to drones and stuff like that. What is the, what's your roadmap look like in your head?
So I think you kind of covered two points, which I agree with. One of them is the concept of serverless is going to keep growing and bleeding into cloud native technologies as we know it. Like a term I've used more in the last year than I ever thought I would is serverless Kubernetes. And with things like the virtual node, ACI, the idea of serverless really being you only manage what you care about, and for the stuff you don't care about, you don't have to manage.
Right.
That kind of mindset, that mentality has already started in AKS with things like virtual nodes, and I don't think about capacity anymore, and I don't have to think about scale. I think that's just gonna keep going. And very soon, our development teams are gonna be able to ship features so much faster, like people using Azure, using the cloud in general, because there'll be all these things that are like, I actually only care about this thing, I still want to use Kubernetes, and we'll give them an experience to do that. Mm. The other trend that's happening, which you also kind of alluded to, is the idea of functions, I think, is also going to start to permeate more than just kind of cloud applications. One you alluded to, and it obviously came up with Brendan as well, is things like the intelligent edge. The thought that, like, we're in a fantastic room right now. In fact, when I was on the elevator on up, it had like a smart screen and it could tell a bunch of amazing stuff about who was in the elevator, where I was going, making sure I was where I was supposed to be. In order for that to happen, there are things like an event. Someone came into the elevator. It needs to do some processing, like who is this person? It needs to maybe check their permissions and so forth. It makes sense to run those type of event logic directly on that device, maybe in that tiny little elevator panel. And we're seeing people being like, hey, functions are event-driven. My IoT stuff is event-driven. So the idea of running these little bite-sized event-driven pieces of code, I think that's going to span to IoT devices, cloud, on-prem. I mean, there's people who are already thinking about like, hey, what about pretty much any device, anything that has anything that has an event, maybe that will start running functions too.
Yeah, I think that, you know, some of my other discussions too, we want to run maybe the solution closer to the implementation, you know, and you use the elevator as an example. I would really hate to be stuck in the elevator waiting for my cloud to process.
DNS like, issue, cannot connect.
DNS, yeah, well, we think I'm supposed to go to the second floor and I'm stuck here. Like I'm texting somebody, I'm sorry I'm late for a meeting, I'm waiting for my cloud to process.
Just the buffering wheel right. while you're so, in the elevator.
I think that you're right, that we'll probably get our solutions closer to where they need to be implemented. So that's great. I think the last thing I'll ask you is, how is our tooling? I really enjoy the at least the Azure Functions part of being able to develop locally and being able to kind of debug on a plane, you know, do my Azure Functions development on a plane. What is that story looking for us right now and kind of where are we going with that?
Yeah, so I'll show you a little bit of this as well. I kind of mentioned before, one of the areas we want to differentiate is in the flexibility, but we also want to develop, differentiate in the developer experience.
Right.
So like here, I'm showing on my Mac in this case, Visual Studio Code, that local experience you mentioned, I could write this function on a plane. In this case, it's triggering on an HTTP request, doing some Python machine learning,
right.
could debug it all, breakpoint it, all that great stuff here. Similar tooling for Visual Studio. So just the fact that as a developer, I feel at home here, that's not the case in the entire world of serverless today because these are kind of these tiny little micro containers that run in the cloud.
Right.
But Azure Functions gives you that local experience. For some of the other stuff, like we talked about Logic Apps some today, I love to show Logic Apps because I think it just speaks louder when you can actually look at it. This is the development experience for building a serverless workflow using Logic Apps. In this case, there is no code here. I'm actually chaining together events through these out-of-the-box connectors.
Yeah.
So this is actually kind of a fun scenario. I don't know if you know this. If someone tweets something negative about Azure, it's an average of something like 3 to 5 minutes before there's a response from Azure support being like, how can we help?
Right.
In order to power stuff like that, there could be serverless apps just like this Logic App where it's saying, hey, trigger on tweets posted from Twitter, use the connector to go detect sentiment using some machine learning stuff. Here I have this nice visual designer. I have some conditional statements here where I can post to Teams or create cases in Dynamics 365 or continue to add new steps using the over 200 out-of-the-box connectors here that Logic Apps provides. So this is one that not everyone's aware of, but kind of as a different type of development experience, in this case, cloud-based for now.
Yeah.
You can really get a lot done with a very little work. And even going on, like I won't show this, but when you start to use things in serverless Kubernetes like virtual nodes, the thing that's amazing about that is it's just the old Kubernetes that you know and love. It just happens to have the ability to burst out to these serverless containers when it needs to. But I'm not changing my workflow at all. I'm just publishing containers and it's just an add-on that happens to work. So it's really polished.
Yeah, and I tell you, if I was trying to write a solution, even like this Logic App, you know, 5-6 years ago, that's a lot of code to write and a lot of things to test. So kind of where everything is getting easier. So I think that our tooling obviously is great and I'm encouraged to see kind of where we're going with it. So it's awesome. Jeff, thanks for crashing the show.
Hey, next time maybe invite me.
Yeah. So thanks a lot. I appreciate all the stuff we're doing in serverless. Certainly your perspective. So yeah. Thanks again.
It's been a pleasure.
All right. So this has been an interrupted version of the Cloud Native Show. I appreciate Jeff coming on and sharing his knowledge. Join us again next time. And in the meantime, check out aka.ms/cloudnativeshow. Thanks. Thanks for watching the Cloud Native Show. Be sure to subscribe, watch for future episode, and especially our streaming shows on Twitch, where we build apps based on the conversations had right here. We'll see you next time.